Hello, this is a responsible day for the 16th of Elul. Thank you for joining us. Today we're going to talk about Rav Kook on Shemitah after selling the land. Just a few days ago on the 9th of Elul, we had Rav Uziel on Shemitah issues. Trust me that this Rav Kook tshuva has other Shemitah issues that he brings up that I think are extremely interesting, especially since Rav Kook's name is often attached to the idea of the Heter Mechira in the late. The truth is that in the late 1900s, people know this, Rav Yitzchok Chanan Spector had originally come up with the Heter Mechira for the people who were just beginning to settle the land of Israel and were having great problems. For Shemitah, it was going to be a huge imposition, I don't know if imposition is the right word, a huge challenge, a huge hardship, and therefore had come up with this Heter only for when it's still a tremendous hardship. So that's one of the controversial issues about the Heter Mechira being applied today, the question of what qualifies as a huge hardship for the people involved. But Rav Kook's name was also attached to the Heter Mechira. People knew that he believed in it as well. So this tshuva from Mishpat Kohen in Simon Samach Zion in chapter 67, which is from the 16th of Elul of Tafresh Samach Tet of 1909, and I believe Tafresh Yud was going to be a Shemitah year. I have a hard time calculating Shemitah years, but I think Tafresh Yud, 1909 to 1910, was a Shemitah year. So in advance or in contemplation of the Shemitah year, he is writing to the Rav of Rosh Pina and the area, and about the Shemitah issues, and about the Heter Mechira issues. And he says, people have reported in my name that I said that once you have the Heter Mechira, once you've sold Eretz Yisrael, you can completely work the land of Israel by a Jew, meaning that the land of Israel, if you sell it to a non-Jew, becomes so non-Eretz Yisrael, so free, so exempt from the allegations of Shemitah, that therefore even Jews can do all that one would do in a regular year, including things that qualify as malachot d'oraita, as we saw in that other tshuva that we spoke about, Rav Uziel's tshuva, which was written in almost 30 years after this tshuva, so probably four Shemitah later. Rav Kook says it's not true. It's against public statements that I've made, because I've made it very clear in a letter that I attached to my harshah, to when I allowed, to what the harshah was when you sent around for people to sign up that they wanted their land sold to a non-Jew. In a letter that I attached to that, I said that the four d'oraita milachot, the four prohibitions d'oraita that we saw in that previous letter, which are planting both for fields and trees, and for trees, it's cutting back the branches so that they grow better, and harvesting or reaping both in fields and trees. Those are d'oraita milachot. And he says those four milachot that are sotmen Torah, he said he had written very clearly, should still, even after selling the land, be performed by non-Jews, by nochrim. And there's no exception. And there's no exceptions, he says, other than charisha. Meaning, as we saw in Rav Uziel's tshuva, there are versions of charisha, of plowing, that might not be considered fully d'oraita, because they're not plowing, meaning Rav Uziel had said that the plowing where you plow it over to get the seed into the ground is full plowing, is full planting, but other plowing, there's a question, it's usher d'oraita, it might be only a obligation, not a prohibition. There were all sorts of issues with that. So Rav Kook said there might be room that Jews could do the plowing themselves. But then he writes in this letter right after that, he says, V'todah l'Hashem, thank God, until now I have not needed to find a way to permit plowing by a Jew in any place, because they've been able to find a non-Jew to do it and to hire for them, and therefore it's been great, and that's what I prefer. And I am writing now, he says, to strengthen those who realize that that's what they should do, that we should do these things as much as possible with non-Jews doing it. So not only would you sell the land, you'd also have a non-Jew do these malachot so that there not be Jewish hands involved even after the mechira in anything that would have been asur min haTorah, that would have been prohibited by Torah law, had it been owned by a Jew. And therefore, that would come out that we are observing Shvi'it, at least at a d'oraita level, in the sense that we've sold the land, so we think that these might not be malachot anymore. And even if they're malachot, they're being done by a non-Jew. So that's removing all of the Torah prohibitions involved. He doesn't bring up here, but one of the key pieces of the Heter Mechira to begin with was the assumption that Shvi'it Bzman Hazeh, that the obligations of Shemitah today are Dirabbanan rather than Doraita. So in other words, he's trying to get it as far from the Torah prohibitions as possible. So it might be that in general, Shemitah is a Dirabbanan issue today. Even if that's true, then we've sold the land. That's what allows us to sell it. But if we've sold the land, then it doesn't belong to a Jew anymore. And it might be that that means that the land doesn't have those obligations of Shemitah, even a rabbinic level. Even to the extent that it does, we are not performing any of the malachot that had there been Shemitah d'oraita would have been Torah prohibitions. We're not doing it, and then we're having a non-Jew do them. So Rav Kook thinks all of that is actually, says, a davar gadol me'od, very important, because it means we are as much as possible fulfilling the halachot of Shemitah by avoidance, but we are, in by refraining from doing those things, we're fulfilling the halachot of Shemitah. But then he was asked about workers. Meaning, if you're going to make it all done by non-Jewish laborers, then you're going to be depriving the Jewish laborers maybe of their livelihood. So he says, he answered that the changing of these Arba Melachot to non-Jews, if it really gets in the way of the livelihood of Jewish workers, that would be a problem, because if part of the whole point of finding all of these are ways around Shemitah, or these ways to observe Shemitah by deflecting the prohibition, were to, because we were worried about the economic collapse of the people living in Israel at the time, the worry was, if we really forced them to not work the land during that year in any way, and they wouldn't get their produce from that year, that would really completely destroy their economic livelihood, which wasn't that secure anyway. Well then, if I do that for the farmers who own the land, and there are these people who don't own land but are agricultural laborers, and they're going to be shut out of their profession for a year in the Shemitah year, because I'm going to say, well, give all that work to the non-Jewish laborers, he says that's a big issue as well. But he says it's not clear to him that that's really what's going to happen, because if you look at the status of the agriculture in Israel at the time in non-Shemitah years, there are already many non-Jewish laborers who do much of the work. And so he thinks there's enough work to go around that if you shift all of the non-Jewish laborers' work to these malachot d'oraita, and you shift all of the Jewish laborers' work to everything else, there should be enough work to go around that you wouldn't have to get in the way of the livelihood of these Jewish laborers, because you'll have the non-Jews doing the stuff that theoretically would have been usher min haTorah if we hadn't found all these ways to it. They were doing all of those things, and the Jews would do everything else. And he thinks that should work. But if there comes a point where we have to find a way to allow some of these things, so that could be either because we don't have enough work to go around and we have Jewish laborers whose livelihood is threatened, and therefore the same motivations that got us to come up with the Heter Mechira to begin with, to get up with the selling of Israel to begin with, would apply here, or it might come up later, let's say we don't trust the non-Jews, or let's say there are not enough non-Jews to go around. So if it comes a point where we have to find a way to allow these things, we have to decide that Zriya, planting, that has to be done by non-Jews. He can't find any way to have a leniency about planting. In other words, but let's remember the leniency that he's not able to find. Having decided that Shemitah is Derabbanan, is a rabbinic issue today, not a Torah prohibition. And by the way, this may change, I almost say God willing, but it'll be hard for farmers in Israel, but it might change in the near future if it becomes the majority of the Jewish people living in Israel. There will be those who will claim that once the majority of the Jewish people live in Israel, even if they're not separated by their tribes, that might make Shemitah d'oraita, and it will add an halachic complication to all of these issues, even for those who currently hold to the Heter Mechira. So it's sort of, it's God willing, because it's a remarkable time, and it's a remarkable thing to see such a return when for hundreds, if not thousands of years, it seemed completely out of the pale of believability. And we are fortunate to see it happening in our days. I think the predictions are in the next 20 to 30 years. It's already true, I believe, that by a small amount, the plurality of Jews, meaning the largest Jewish population in the world, is in Eretz Israel. And as I once saw Rav Yosef on a video tube, on a YouTube video say, he didn't make the YouTube video, they put it on YouTube, v'chayena v'chayena, we can only hope that it continues and grows. But that's going to be a compilation here. So already back in 1909, Rav Kook is saying that planting, he sees no way around it, even though, look how derabbanan it is, and he still sees no way around it. It would have been d'oraita if Shemitah was Doraita and if the land hadn't been sold. But he's decided Shemitah is not Doraita in his time, and you sold the land to non-Jews because you held that selling it to non-Jews is mafkia, removes enough of the sanctity of Eretz Israel to allow for the working of the land, and yet he is unwilling to allow Jews to do it. He thinks that has to be done by non-Jews. It's remarkable to me, and I didn't know the tshuva before I was looking for it for these purposes. It's remarkable to me because it points out that the reputation that Rav Kook has around these issues is that he was just matir. And as we're watching him working through these issues, it's very clear that he's finding heterim, he's finding leniency because he's got Jewish farmers in front of him whose livelihoods he feels the need to protect and who he can't find a way, and that's what he's looking for. He's looking for a way to help them and to find a way to protect them. And even within all of that, he's looking for ways to keep as much as he can, even though he's pushed it off to make it seem like it shouldn't be a big issue. And if you told me there's a Darabanan of planting, I might have said, So I feel comfortable. We've gotten rid of the Kedusha of Eretz Yisrael and this, and it's therefore, and Shemitah is only Rabbanan, and voila. That's not his ruling. His ruling is planting, you got to find a non-Jew to do the planting. When it comes to the other three malachot, Smira, Ksira, and Bitzira, there he thinks you can find a heter, b'mekom dechak gadol, if you have really a lot of pressure. So remember, he's asked, he's preferred, and he's promoted the idea that you should try to find among your non-Jewish laborers who you're hiring anyway, who you're paying anyway to do malacha, to do agricultural labor for you in all the other years of the Shemitah cycle. This year, his strong preference is have them do these malachot. But if for some reason it's unable to do, either you don't have enough, or you have Jewish laborers who you can't find enough work for to give them a living otherwise, or you don't trust the non-Jewish laborers for whatever reason, so then he's going to find ways around each of these things to make it possible. So Zimira means cutting back branches so that they can grow better. So he says, our Zimira today is not the Zimira, it's not the cutting back that they used to do in the time of the Gemara, the Mishnah in the Gemara. And back then, And he says, and as we see the Arabs today do it, they used to simply cut back some of the tips of the heads of the branches, like the branches are getting too long, so they cut back parts of the branches, right? And they leave lots of the branch in place. And that is clearly because they think that those branches will grow more if they're not so long. Meaning, I think it's that if they're too long, then as they grow the fruit, it weighs on the branch, therefore it grows less. But if you cut it back so it's the right size, it'll grow more. That's actually very much like planting. You're cutting back the branch because you'll get more produce in this year. So that, if that was the kind of cutting back, there's a word for it. I'm just not a gardener or a planter or a farmer. I apologize. But if that kind of cutting back would be the same as planting, and therefore would be usher, and he would say there'd be no way that a Jew could do it, like he said about the planting. But the Jewish farmers' practice with cutting these things back, like vines, was or branches on trees, was they would cut it all the way back until close to the trunk, until close to the end. And their point wasn't that it was going to just help it that this year it would be able to grow more because it wouldn't get too weighted down or bend too far or maybe, you know, break. It was that by cutting it back all the way, it would help the plant or the tree in the future grow better, right? Because as the branches got bigger and bigger and bigger, they, even though in particular years you'd have more produce, in the long term, it saps the strength of the tree, and the tree eventually dries out completely and dies. So this Zimira, this version of cutting back, is to help the tree do better. It's to help the tree's long-term health, but it's not a form of planting. So you could say that's in the category of another category you have in the Mishnayot in Shvi'it, HaMizanev Bikfanim, that you're trying, which is about the long-term health of the tree. And therefore, you could say that this is completely different enough that it would not be that melacha d'oraita, that Torah prohibited act, and therefore you'd be allowed to. Meaning, because in Shemitah, there are things we're allowed to do for long-term health issues. There's maybe some weeding we're allowed to do. There are various kinds of things we're allowed to do to promote the long-term health of the tree that are not directly about getting more produce this year. And Rav Cook points out he hasn't come out yet with the book called Shabbat Haaretz. He says explain that further in that book that's going to come out. So if that's true, if our Zimira, our cutting back, is different than the time of the Mishnah and the Gemara, and it's for a different purpose, it's not for producing more fruit this year, it's producing a healthier tree or healthier plant in general. So then, and remember, he's preferred all along that this be done by a non-Jew. But if we have a problem, we can be matir after the Heter Mechira to do Zimira, even with a Jew, if we can't do it with a non-Jew. But an issue here is that this kind of Zimira takes a great deal of expertise in planting and agriculture, meaning knowing the right way to do it. Because if you don't do it the right way, you might end up cutting too much, I think is the point. And then you might destroy the vine. You might destroy this thing completely, and therefore you don't want to do that. And then sometimes you can't find a non-Jew who has the expertise, or a non-Jew, I think, who you trust enough to do it. And therefore, you might have to do it with a Jew. And therefore, so he thinks it's possible to do it in these situations because it's different. But he has one more layer. If you're going to do it with a non-Jew, with a Jew, you should still do it with a shinoi. I've said it before, so I apologize if it just sounds repetitive to you, but I think it bears noting of watching Rav Cook fight his way to this leniency. This is not a matter of disregard for halachic strictures. It's not a matter of saying we have a need and therefore halacha must step aside. This is a matter of saying we have a need and I'm going to find my way as best I can to the most halachic room I can find to allow for it. And every step of the way, I'm going to be alert to finding more halachic rooms and ways to find more halachic rooms. So here we are. We've sold the land, which, as I've said, involves already deciding that Shemitah is derabanan. Now we've sold the land. So theoretically, that means it doesn't belong to Jews, and therefore means the Shemitah doesn't apply to it at all. Because if it didn't mean that, then the whole Heter Mechira doesn't mean anything. And even though it means that the non-Jew owns it, and the non-Jew's ownership removes the Shemitah issues from the land. Nonetheless, Rav Cook says, but we shouldn't just rely on that. We should treat it as if there's also a Shemitah issue. And therefore, the things that would have been prohibited on the Torah level, we got to make sure not to do them. And even the ones that we're going to do by not to do them by virtue of having a non-Jew do them for us. And even those that we can't have a non-Jew do for us for the various reasons. Either we don't have a non-Jew available, or we have Jews we have to, whose support, whose livelihood is completely tied up in this. I can still tell you that Zmira is not the Zmira they did back then, and therefore it's not really Zmira del right. It's not really the cutting back of... Turns out I have something called an internet, and I can finally say the word is pruning, right? It is cutting it back in that way. I got tired of saying cutting back, so I looked it up. Pruning. So even if our pruning today is not the pruning they did in the time of the Mishnah and the Gemara, and therefore you would have said it's also not the Delraita, it's not the biblical prohibition, because our pruning cuts it all the way back, prunes it all the way back such that it'll be good for the long-term health of the tree or the vine, and that's different. Nonetheless, right, with all of those things already in place, nonetheless, Rav Cook says, but you should do it with a shinoi. You should find a way to do it differently than you would do it. He's going to suggest a way. Differently than you would do it in other years of the agricultural cycle. And he says, and I looked and I found that the Yerushalmi in Perek Dalet of Shvi'it says that if somebody's cutting back beams or whatever it is, he shouldn't do it diagonally like it's ordinarily done. He should do it in a straight line, whatever they were talking about there. But what's valuable of that for Rav Cook is that in those days, whoever cut things back would tend to do it diagonally, and therefore, if one does it straight, it's considered a shinoi. He says he's looked into the question of cutting things back, of pruning in his time, and if it has to be done by a Jew, he says the general custom in their times was to prune in a straight line by cutting the branch or whatever it was straight down. And he therefore says, if you get into a situation where you have to have a Jew do it in Shemitah, you should do it diagonally. And that would be a shinoi, and that would also help lower the level of whatever prohibition is being done, and therefore, bishat hatzkach, as he said, Bishat HaTchak, he thinks that that's the way you should do it. This whole idea of Shat HaTchak and being aware of it, reducing prohibitions, is a very, very important one. And it's an it's a feeling, an ethos, I think is the right word for it. It's like a halachic sensitivity that should really be involved in everything that we do, and we're watching Rav Cook here give it to us expertly. He refers to us to a Gemara in Shabbat and Kuf Yud Tet, where the Gemara talks about, has a debate between Rav and Shmuel about how you change your food on Shabbos to make it more honored. And so Rav says you should make your meals earlier, and Shmuel says you should make your meals later. And then they give an example of that. The sons of Rav Papa Bar Abba come to Rav Papa, and they say, we have meat and wine all week because we're wealthy. So how do we make Shabbos special? He says to them, well, if you tend to eat early, then eat late. If you tend to eat late, then eat early. And so that whole idea of changing something out of recognition of a new day that's here, Rav Cook is going to apply that here as well and say that by virtue of pruning in a diagonal instead of in a straight line, that's also going to be something to show that we are trying to observe the Shemitah and beware of the Shemitah issues. So that's the way he gets the pruning out of the way, or tries ways to make the pruning b'shadachak. If it's absolutely necessary, find ways to make it okay. When it comes to reaping or harvesting, so he says, there, if we can do it with a shinoi, that would really, really help us, because Rove Poskim, most authorities on this issue, think that the prohibition of these things, of pruning and reaping, is only when you do it kedarko. Meaning, if I do something not in its ordinary way, let's say on Shabbos, we often talk about, if you have to do something on Shabbos, and you're saving a life, or whatever, but if I can do it b'shinoi, if I can do it in a non-ordinary way, that's better. So there you usually think it's better, because then it becomes a rabbinic prohibition, rather than a d'oraita prohibition. When it came to Kitzirau, Bitzirau, when it came to harvesting and reaping, there were many who held, Rav Cook is telling us, that if you do it Bishinoi, there's no Isser whatsoever. So the Rambam says that the main prohibition of Bitzira is Bitzira Kiderech HaBotzerim, the way that harvesters do it, or the way that, yeah, the harvesters do it, that's the Rash and the Reina Tam. So there's a great consensus or a general consensus that's true. So if we could find a way to do it with shinoi, that would be really, really great, because you'd avoid an Isser Torah, you avoid Torah prohibition. And then he says, but I know that it's very hard to convince people to do this, and it's not easy to get it done, and you can only say it to lasridim yirei Hashem, to the few who are God-fearing, right, who will pay attention, who will obey a ruling that we give, the Ksira B'tzira. How would you do it? You would do it b'kelim acherim. You would find other tools to do it. So if you're used to reaping with a scythe or with whatever it is you reap with and harvest with, it can be hard to change it because you get into a rhythm, you get into a practice, and then all of a sudden this year you're going to do it with a completely different thing. And you can imagine many farmers, especially those, sadly, who are not connected to observance and don't really care about observance, some of whom probably were anti-observance, and you say to them, listen, this year you have to reduce your productivity and your efficiency by using this whole new set of tools that won't harvest in the exact same way, won't harvest as well, because if they would harvest as well, we've used them in the other years as well. So we're talking about, in some way, saying to them, you're going to have to work harder, you're going to have to do it less efficiently. You're not going to find a lot of people do that. But that would be the best thing, Rav Cook says, because if you did it that way, that might not even be the prohibition at all of the Shemitah prohibition of Doraita, of Ksira B'tzira, and therefore you can find a way completely out of it. So therefore, but since it's not realistic, and the realism of this tshuva should jump out at us, make us aware of, and Rav Cook is by far not the only one who does these things, it's just an excellent example of it, of how being a meshiv, being a respondent, was about finding the reality in front of you and finding the values within that reality and finding your best way to help people get to combine the realities of their situation with a full halakhic observance. Sometimes that requires saying, no, sorry, it's prohibited, like he does with planting, right, with dropping the seeds in the ground. But much of the time, it involves finding the ways around it. So here, the best way around would say, use a different tool. But since he knows that people won't listen to that, he says, if you can't, another way to do it is, and remember, this is the land that we've sold, theoretically, right, but officially, the legal fiction, we've sold the land. He says that you should also, in front of three people, before you cut anything, you're going to cut now with your regular tools, because we're talking about a farmer who doesn't care enough to be willing to use other tools, other ways to harvest, but he should declare the land hefker. I'm sorry, not the land. He should declare the harvest, the produce, hefker, right, not belonging to anybody before he cuts it, and the same thing with the fruit of the trees before he takes them down, and then make a contract with the laborers, with the workers, that if they want to cut and harvest and reap, right, even though this produce is hefker now, it doesn't really belong to anybody, so that they'll be doing it like doing it min hamufkar on Shvi'it, and we'll pay them every day their labor for doing that. So how does that help? Because as Rav Kook points out, once it's hefker, the cutting down of things in Shvi'it is not actually prohibited. Right? If somebody wants to go on Shvi'it and harvest a lot of stuff, let's say it's hefker. So let's say in a ideal world, I own a farm. I have a whole wheat field that has now grown, and I want to get this wheat harvested, but it's Shvi'it. So one way I can do it is I can say, listen, everybody, it's Shvi'it, feel free to come and take what you want, but I'm not cutting it down for you. But another way to do it is I could say, I'll cut it down for you. So I can't cut it down kederach habotzrim because that's an issur d'oraita. But if it's hefker and I cut it, however I cut it, and I leave it for hefker, so that's not the same thing whatsoever. So that's what Rav Kook is saying here too. So let the farmers tell their workers to be mafkir the produce. They'll pay the workers daily for what they do. And all that. But he says, but then you're going to have to make it a part of a condition of the original heter mechira. Right, with the Arab or the non-Jew, in their days there was an Arab, with the Arab who's buying Eretz Israel officially, that he gives permission to the Jews to do what they want when they're harvesting, like as if it was their land. Meaning, in this Heter Mechira, it's not enough to say you're selling the land to the non-Jew, because if the land belongs to him, then what grows on it belongs to him as well. So you've got to make it part of the deal that, and it's a complicated bill of sale then, that as I'm selling it, I'm saying, but I have the right to the produce, do anything I want with the produce, and that doesn't nullify the sale. It's not so clear that that's so simple, but that's the way you have to write the Heter Mechira, he says, and therefore, if the non-Jew says it's fine with him, he doesn't mind, then you can do all of these things, and then it becomes like the laborers are really cutting it down for whoever wants it, for hefker. But he says, if that's true, you have to do it just close to the harvesting, because you don't want them to become Jewish, right? You don't want the Jews getting involved too early, because then it becomes like it's Jewish produce. You don't want it to be Jewish produce, because then all of the laws are to apply. So therefore, you wait, and then at the moment that you're about to cut it, harvest it, reap it, you have them come, and you have to do this, you make this rule, and therefore he thinks that would work in terms of all the things that we worried about. Because after all, there are those who hold there's no issur of ksira b'tzira of any kind of reaping or harvesting with perot that are with produce that is hefker, and so you have that extra leniency as well. So all of those are the ways that Rav Kook says he thinks you can have a leniency on these issues if you have a real great shot, the chak, a real great time of pressure. But he says, right now, I'm not sure we've reached that point, and therefore, I'm not going to decide these issues yet. Meaning, at this point in 1909, when I really think the Jews weren't at all wealthy, he thinks there's still enough room to have Arab laborers do all the melachot, right, all the Torah prohibited melachot, to find a way to do that. So I don't think we have to find yet a way to allow all the harvesting to be done by Jews after the Mechira, and we'll have to think about it and talk about it. And then he says, in Zichron, where this guy's a rabbi, he says, did everybody sign? Everybody signed the Heter Mechira. It's not like, and he's not envisioning a Heter Mechira where, you know, some central authority just does it. He wants all of the people who own farms to make sure, to own land, to make sure that they sign the Harsha'ah, that they sign the permissibility of selling the land, because it's that signing, and then observing the halachot as he's given them out in this letter and other places, he says, then we're really fulfilling the Torah mitzvah of Shemitah, because by being careful to make sure that we don't transgress any of the Torah strictures about Shemitah, especially in our times when there's some financial pressure on this issue, that's a great thing. And then he says, v'yicholahi shetei rachem. The fact that we're careful about this observance could itself be a factor in bringing upon us Hashem's compassion, Hashem's racham, Hashem's mercy, and maybe with this merit to bring light to the darkness of the house of Israel, and to return, all the people we hope to have returned, to have a Shivat Zion and all the
great things.
He also thinks that it's worth making the prices on produce in this year to be just the price for the Torah and the Machshirim, for the parts of labor, basically, and that the fruit itself will be caught up, will be sort of swallowed, the price of the fruits will be swallowed up in a minute. This is sort of what, like, I think the Otzar Beit Din in Israel today does, and therefore you won't be doing Schora, you won't be doing business with the produce of Shvi'it, so you find a way to include that all in the price and try to avoid as much as you can paying for the fruit, because the fruit itself was supposed to be hefker. And if you can do that, that is the Tikkun Gadol, that's really a very great way of also making it better. And he's got such seals and signatures for factories or for people who sell fruit in his area. And he thinks everybody who cares about the Rashem should do it this way. Al pi haTorah v'mitzvah. So that is Rav Kook on the 16th of Elul, giving us a primer, a lesson, an easy lesson on how to keep halacha even when it needs to be in some sense circumvented, how to make sure to keep our halakhic sensibilities or halakhic wits about around us to care both about the helping of people in financial need as well as keeping to halacha. That is a responsibility for the 16th of Elul, Rav Kook on Shemitah, even after the Hefter Mechira. Thank you for joining us. Have a great day.